Thank you for choosing to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. In a myriad and plethora of other podcast conversations you could be choosing, we are really grateful that you chose to click on our link. And why should you choose to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast? Well, not least because we have honest, open, insightful conversations with leaders from across the recruitment industry and beyond. We often invite people on who are leaders and experts in markets and sectors that we believe we can all truly learn from. Just a word of thanks to our sponsor, Pager, and to our proud partners, Needy and Inclusion Crowd, and a warm welcome to our new partner, Keybridge IT. More about all of those later on in the show. So without further ado, let's get to know this week's guest. Thank you for joining me on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. I am so excited to welcome back to our global community today somebody who I'm personally very fond of and professionally speaking to. We've got to know each other very well over the last couple of years. And she is actually a returner to our podcast, although this time on her own. This is Susanna Gray-Jones, and she is the fellow podcast host of The Counteroffer and also founder of Chime Search, which is a very niche rec-to-rec focusing on the education and financial services industry. And she's based over in Dubai. And during this really flamboyant, effervescent, gregarious conversation, we cover an awful lot in a very short episode. Let me tell you, there will be a part B, I'm sure, later on in the season. We talk about what makes a top biller. What does she think a top employer looks like? How does she mark herself out as a headhunter? What tips does she give you to become a best headhunter in your market? And we talk about the best interview process. What do you think the best interview process should look like? I promise you, everybody should be listening to this, whether you're a leader, whether you're a recruiter of 1 month or 20 years, you're going to get something from today's conversation, trust me. So without further ado, let's jump in. We are so proud at the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast to be sponsored by Pager. Pager helps recruiters to build personal brands, to identify new business opportunities, to attract those hard-to-find candidates, and to basically have better conversations. Now, you will have a large network that you want to build credibility with on LinkedIn, and sometimes posting content every day feels impossible. Now, that changes once you have Pager. Pager provides you with the ideas, the content, and the scheduling capability to produce daily content to build out your own personal brand in minutes. And for business development too. Pager identifies companies that are advertising jobs, have key hiring indicators such as funding rounds, mergers, acquisitions, or senior appointments, and then alerts you to this daily. Pager also enables you to write candidate-centric job adverts without bias in seconds. So once you advertise your job, Pager will then automatically create a branded post and publish it to LinkedIn without you even having to lift a finger. So when you want to actively source candidates, you can create complex Boolean strings in seconds. All you need to do is to provide the job title and location. Now, Pager is making thousands and thousands of recruiters smarter and faster. For more information, click on the link pager.co to book your demo, and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when inquiring. Now, back to the episode. This is Leisha Holmes, and I'm your host on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast, and I am so excited to welcome back to our amazing global community today somebody who has been on the pod previously, but she was a part of a duo. We were going for kind of a little bit of a vibe where it was more than one person, more than one expert, but I thought, you know what, I want you all to get to know this amazing individual separately, because I've had the pleasure to get to know her both personally and professionally over the last 12-18 months or so, I would say. This is Susanna Gray-Jones, and she is the founder of Chime Search, which is a global rec-to-rec, and also a fellow podcast host of The Counteroffer, of which I've been on. I think I've been on twice, haven't I?
You've been on twice. You've been an excellent guest. You've been an excellent guest.
Well, quid pro quo, as they say. Welcome back to you today, Susanna. How are you?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me back. I love your podcast and I adore you. So I'm very grateful.
Well, Likewise, I mean, we'll try not to make it too cheesy with the self, you know, we do self reciprocating love, because we adore each other, we admire each other, we're both working moms, both very passionate about a lot of things, and I really want you all to get to know Susanna, because she's just, you are just one of those very real, sweet, kind, passionate, shrewd, switched on recruiters, and we both have a lot in common because we're both Rex by day. Podcast host by day as well. For those who are hiding under a stone somewhere, because I can't believe, tell us a little bit about your story, because you're actually recording this over in Dubai, which is where you're based at the moment. Tell us a bit about your story.
Definitely. So I worked in, and thank you very much for having me on again, by the way. I'm absolutely stoked to be here. I started recruitment, probably about 16 years ago. Worked my way up in one company, left, went to work for a competitor, came back, worked my way up to sales director, started new offices, complete salesperson through and through, and then had two children, had a small health scare, and decided to pack up and move to Dubai and set up my business here. So a lot has happened in the last sort of couple of years.
Very exciting. So Chime Search, you're quite a niche rector, aren't you?
I very much specialize in the education recruitment sector, which is where I've worked, but also slightly in the financial sector. What I'm really passionate about, and I think you'll stand with this as well, I'm really passionate about finding those people who are exquisite elite recruiters who are just working in the wrong company. I'm a massive believer that many strong recruiters leave recruitment for the wrong reasons, and it's keeping those superstars in the right environments for them.
What she just said, everybody. And if you're listening to this now as one of our community, you're here because you want to elevate, you want to learn, you want to develop, you want to learn from all these amazing experts. And I genuinely think, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a rec by day, but I think that we have a very privileged position doing our job because we get to see how great companies do things. We also get to hear from the testimony of candidates that are working in shit companies, how not to do it. And we can plagiarize, we can advise, we can coach leaders and recruiters in what best practice really looks like. So what's your observations been of rec to rec? Let's just take a pot in history. I'd say over the last, since COVID, where do you see the recruitment industry landscape now? Like, where are we in our evolution, do you think?
It's been fascinating because I think a lot of people got a misconception of what recruitment actually is. So we had COVID, a lot of companies, especially in the public sector, they became desperate because there was sickness, there was high staff turnover. For recruiters, it was a dream. If you came into recruitment, you could be very transactional, maybe wrongly so, right? So there were some really high billing recruiters 2020, 2021. And then for me, and this might be different for you, but 2022 hit. And suddenly recruiters had to pick up the phone and do BD. And a lot of the people who've been very much delivery and been fortunate to have great clients somehow had to sort of start doing the headhunting, had to start doing the BD. And I would get calls from people and they would say, I really want to move this company. And I'm like, why? What's wrong? They're very sales focused. It's much more cutthroat. And I'm thinking to myself, well, actually, that's what recruitment's always been.
That is recruitment.
It's like, I'm a massive believer. Like if you're in a school and you've got a teacher, you remember the teachers who were always very strict at the beginning and then they'd soften. It's very similar in recruitment. If it's too easy early on and then it gets difficult, it's much more difficult. I think actually.
That's a really good analogy because we've all been there. We've all had a teacher like that. And like you say, when they were nice to you, you were like, oh, this is really nice. Yeah. I must be doing okay.
Yeah. You appreciate it more. It's like expectations, right? If I think Leisha's going to give me a really hard time today and you're really nice, I'm like, oh, that was awesome. But the other way around, it never goes quite well.
No, I think you're right. And I think we have to be very mindful that a lot of our listeners, I mean, you've obviously got your podcast with the Counteroffer as well, will be those who are early careers, they're starting their recruitment journey, maybe they've started since COVID. And the cold facts are that the sort of 2 year window post COVID boom were not real recruitment. That wasn't real. That wasn't what it was about. I've never known it in 25 years be like that before or since. And I can't see that ever happening again. So I think that it was almost like we were holding our breath for a year in COVID. And then all of a sudden, everybody's like, quick, hire, boom. And the reality of the last 18 months, as we record this now midway through 2024, I think, and going forward, we are going to come out, you know, the I think things always settle. We always go in a cycle. But I think if you're listening to this and you don't enjoy the what you said there is proactive, it's being proactive. This is not the job for you. But if you're hopefully listening, thinking, yeah, that's fine, you know, I'm happy to do that, then I think you're at a really exciting part of our evolution, because we've had kind of been through some really challenging years recently. And I think that there's definitely an abundance there for those who've got the right skill set.
So true. So true.
So you picked up, you started in your beautiful intro there that you're looking for those, the higher echelons, those top billers. So what's your definition of what makes a top biller?
Well, where do I start? I mean, first of all, I just picked up on something there about the sales ability. Maybe instead of saying sales, because I think people have a stigma of sales, they think car salesperson, dishonest. I think change that to influencing people. Like you said, as a recruiter, you're looking at someone's blind spot. There's no reason why anyone should never speak to a recruiter, because we see everything sort of from a sky view. We see what clients are offering, where candidates are staying. We see what the commission structures look like. We see what someone might not know could be better for them progression-wise. So ultimately, there's going to be an element of persuasion there and influencing people opposed to selling to them. So the consulting side, but being confident to do that. Leisha might say to me, Suze, I'm really not looking for a role right now. And I don't have to be salesy to say, oh, Leisha, I completely understand that. However, if you ever do want to know what else is out there, I can give you a real bird's eye view of what is going on. You'd be mad not to speak to me. That's not being salesy.
It's not. What would interest you? What would make you want to know more? Which parts of the company would you want to know more about? What can I interest you in terms of insights and data when we capture it? You know, what can I come back to you with? It's about, I think that the misconception, again, of the stereotypical salesperson, I think those days are also long gone. I think naturally, to be tenacious enough in recruitment to be successful, the top billers that I see and that I, of which I class myself as one, is that we naturally sell. It's not an obvious sell. It's, you know, understanding how to ask the pre-close questions, understanding that you need to cover all your bases with, you know, what you just said there, that sort of bird's eye view. I've never really just heard it described like that, but that's exactly what we do. And when when you're somebody looking for a new job, you don't always see those blind spots, whereas we're totally impartial.
It's so true. And if anyone there is being told today to do a sales hour, to get on the phone or do BD, nobody wants to do it. And that's what we often don't tell people. We don't tell them as managers, nobody wants to do it. Nobody wants to get rejected. It's much easier to not do the BD. But when you get over that and you get into the habit, which I think is my second thing for a top biller, having that discipline and having that grit and that resilience to know that actually it would be easy not to, but I'm going to do it anyway, that hustle. And you've got to interrupt people. No one wants to be interrupted. You know, your daughter calls you now. You were just saying you love her to bits, right? But you're still saying, what do you want? But if it's someone you don't know, of course you're going to be a bit off with them at the start. So I think there's an element of that charm, having that charm to be able to positively interrupt people in a nice way.
I'm trying to count how many words are on, I'm not going to try and do it, but with one sentence, the reason for my call. The reason for my call is this. This is why I'm interrupting you, because I've noticed that your business has recently won a new project. And for that project, I'm going to presume, you know, have you got your stuff in place? What team have you got? What talent team have you got? Or whatever it might be. And if it's a headhunt call to a candidate, the reason for my call today is that I noticed on your LinkedIn profile that you seemingly, you know, tend to move roles every few years. And I can see you coming up for your fourth year or whatever it might be. We're just giving nuances there, myself and Susanna, but there should be a reason for the call. I mean, just going back to what you said there, you know, there's the expression, isn't there? I know you like your expressions because I stole your elephant one off you, but they eat the frog. You have to eat your frog. There's something that you do in every job, whatever your job is, that you're not going to enjoy, and you just have to eat it anyway. You have to do it. So I think it's understanding that we all appreciate that the sales part of the job is probably, for a lot of people, the most challenging, because you're setting yourself up to be rejected. But that's not always going to be the case. You're not always going to get rejected. Think about how you'll feel when somebody's like, actually, I am interested in having a conversation with you.
Yeah, there is positivity in failure. I love what you said there about the reason for my call when you talked about that LinkedIn profile. You bring out that person. You don't talk. So many salespeople, they talk about themselves. Like, the reason for my call is I'm Susanna and I'm from, nobody cares who I, you know, let's make it about that person. Which I loved that you just did that. But yeah, I think, like you say, it's not taking the easy way out, bouncing back. I struggle to bounce back. I don't know about you, but sometimes it's just, you just don't want to bounce back. So actually having that mindset, I sometimes think no one is looking for a job. No one's going to want to work in one of my positions. But then I've just got to remember, that's just the amygdala in my brain. The rational side knows, of course, there's someone who's going to want to take your call that day. And it's having that mindset to kind of think, bounce back, just get on with it and do it anyway.
But that goes back to your point you made there about discipline. If I may add to that, that there has to be consistency in that discipline. And I think knowing if you're doing the same actions, the basic actions every single day, you know, by the law of probability, you will achieve the goal ultimately. And of course, as you become, and the top billers will hone those skills and will understand and will be like, you know, they'll sniff out the opportunity and they'll be able to probably make less calls than somebody who's 2-3 years into their job, because they know exactly who they're going to go and call and they know the reason why they're calling them.
Yeah, it's the expectations, isn't it? Like, if I expect that if I make 10 calls that no one's interested, then probably won't happen for me. But if I expect that I might make 10, but if I keep going, someone will be interested. It's so much about mindset. And I know you and I are both fascinated by the mental health side of it as well, and the keeping going. And I think everyone in recruitment probably at some point needs some kind of therapy. I do. I do. I think all need some kind of therapy.
But that, I mean, that's just being a human being. There's so much pressure on us all now to be the best mum, to be the best girlfriend, to look the best, to wear the best clothes, to, you know, to everything, because of social media, is this perception that you have to be the best at everything. So I think that's a whole different podcast, but I think it's really important, and actually might be a nice segue into my next question, which is, what do you think makes a top employer? Now, for me, I'm going to go first. I do think it's companies that recognize that this is a very stressful job and that we very often see burnout. We don't need to see burnout anymore, so they create a well-being culture. So for me, that's definitely going to be one of the top things that I look for when I'm engaging with a new employer. What are the things that you would say make a top employer for people to work for?
I love what you just said, because I think emotional control is key in this role, so having a well-being environment is so key. I think a lot of companies forget to do check-ins, especially with their top billers. And I think it doesn't have to be a meeting for the meeting's sake, but even if it's just half an hour a week, just to give someone that platform to speak. It sounds obvious, but so many companies, that they're not doing it. And the best managers that I see are the ones that they show care and candor, right? I think the hire and fire culture should just die. It should be dead. It's like dating. If I keep dating lots of different people and I keep dumping them, it doesn't suggest that I'm a very good dater.
No,
so
agreed.
I think, like,
and I think Alex would be very disappointed in you if he did that. That's her husband, by the way.
He would. but we have to be accountable for our hiring decisions. And the best companies are the ones where they are constantly checking for the feedback. Like, and I think that shows, you could say, a top biller as well, you know, the ability to take feedback, even when you don't want it, is what makes a person, I believe. I genuinely do. And I think if you can communicate boundaries at the same time, there's hearing what people have to say and making them feel heard, it creates a great culture. And it's very rare, actually. It's more rare than it should be. Do you agree?
I do. And I want to add to that, if I may, that the addendum should be that it's a company that makes you feel psychologically safe, that that no matter how you're performing or how you're feeling, if you, because they've created a culture of communication, they make you feel safe enough to go, do you know what, I'm not fit, like you've just said that, you know, it is a very stressful job, and at some point maybe people do feel like they need extra support and that they want to be able to do that and not have to call you and me as a rec and say, I'm not getting any support. I do think it's much rarer than it should be. And I think that's because of the continuous pressure on leaders who are very often listening to this podcast. In fact, it's probably more leaders than anything. So what can leaders do you think, to elevate themselves? If there was one thing that they should do today after listening to this to make themselves a much better place to work? What's the one thing that you would ask them to do?
I think the one thing that I would put at the top would be to be curious. If someone's underperforming, to not put them in a box. They're underperforming, they're lazy or whatever. It's so easy to do that, but to be curious, because it might be that they believe something. So like, for example, I don't know, my child, right? She believes in Father Christmas, and no one, even her friends who say Father Christmas isn't real, no one will go past that belief. Father Christmas is real. But then if you start asking questions about people's beliefs, like, well, how do you think, I don't know, the reindeers get down the chimney? That's when people start to change their beliefs. And the best leaders are the ones that ask questions. If someone believes that sales calls don't work, to ask them realistic questions. Well, how do you think they will feel if you do call them at the right time and you've interrupted them at the right time? It's the best companies that I work with show accountability on behalf of their staff. Yeah. The minute that they walk through that door, we are responsible for them, and they don't have to fire people because they are so good at asking the right questions that often that person leaves of their own accord. So it's being curious, seek first to understand and then be understood.
I love that. I really do. I think if we all just take stock of that today in everything that we're doing, I think we'll all be better at what we do. Wow. Now, your business is slightly different in the model that you operate, because obviously I'm 100% inbound. I don't just sit there twiddling my thumbs waiting for the phone to ring, but that's just the model I've created over 20 years. Whereas you're, without a shadow of a doubt, the headhunter in RecToRec. So how have you done that? How have you become so astute? And how can you share some secrets with us as to how you've become so successful at doing that?
You're very kind. Thank you. I'll take the compliment.
Take it.
I think
she's better at taking compliments, I have to say.
I think there's an element of going outside the norm. And what I mean by that is that LinkedIn is so crowded. Everyone's getting messages all the time. The first thing that people think when they get a message from a recruiter is they're going to push me into something that I don't want. And I think reassuring them, the more people that I say to, I am not going to push you. I speak to people for 9 months, 12 months, and we still don't place, they still don't go into one of my placements, and that's fine. I'm not in a business to make you move if you're not in the right place to move, or if you don't need to move, right? Because just because I think I might know what's a good environment, you might be very happy where you are. And I think too many headhunters out there, they just go in with the, I want to make placements, I got to make that person move. You taught me this because you talk about having a responsibility and it being a privilege to do what we do. And it is. If you're just simply going out there for the purpose of placing people, then you are, in my opinion, going to be a crap recruiter. You need to go out there to do the best thing for the people that you're working with, and they will know that. And that's why I think that you don't have to do any sales, because you get referred quite a lot of people, which is amazing. And it shows how credible you are. And I think that is the sign of a credible headhunter, to go out there, inform people, not push people.
Well, I mean, thank you. That's very kind. But I think what
enough,
you've said
enough
there,
ego stroking enough of each other.
Seriously. But no, I mean, I think what you've said there is actually, you know, the any recruiter listening that's having to, or being tasked with being proactive in identifying talent and headhunting talent and actually making themselves stand out. You make a really salient point there about LinkedIn. It's so noisy, is that you're not promoting that any overnight successes, you know, 9, 12 months, however long it takes. It's about starting a relationship. That's your actual intention when you're connecting to them and headhunting them, is not to place them. It is actually to start a relationship with them. And I think that's the key thing here about what integrity really means, because they will, the only way you can ever demonstrate integrity, I believe, is built up over a long time through trust. It's through the actions that you take or don't take, in which case, in your example, I'm not trying to headhunt you to make you move jobs, because actually, from what you've said, you're in a great company and I think you're doing really well. And they'll go, what? Wow. Okay. And actually, that'll come back and pay dividends quite literally in years to come, months to come, or through referrals. And actually, that is how I have built my reputation, because I would have those conversations without even anyone explaining this bit to me. I was just like, oh God, no, you sound great where you are. Why would you move? And the next thing you know, they're referring three friends to me who aren't working there. So yeah. I think that's why you have set yourself apart and why you have clearly got the reputation that you have. And if people are, you know, being challenged, because I do think that we're at a really saturated point on LinkedIn. Don't get me wrong, I don't think it's going anywhere. That's not me saying, oh, LinkedIn's dying. I don't think it is at all. But I think I'm the recipient daily of AI generated headhunt emails from RectorX, who obviously have me, you know, I'm connected to loads of RectorX. I have done over the years, or people moved into it since I've connected. So how does somebody listening now that's being tasked, not necessarily as a RectorX, of course, we've got recruiters of all walks of life, how do you make yourself stand out on an in-mail?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I think you mean from a recruiter's perspective. I think a bit of what you mentioned before, I think it's showing interest in something on someone's LinkedIn profile to show that you've read it, because there's nothing worse than feeling like someone doesn't know or doesn't actually recognize who you are. I hate getting AI messages. It makes me feel like, makes it feel like a piece of meat. It does. And I think like, if you can like find something that interests you, the response is always so much greater. I'm a massive advocate, and I know you are too, of video messages.
I was just about to say that to you.
I mean, yeah. I'm a bit vain, so I'm a bit suited to the voice messages a bit more. But I do love the video messages, and I think it can show that you're being genuine as well, and it's not just a robot. I'm although I think AI can do brilliant things, nothing will replace the human. You know, ultimately recruiters cannot be robots, and I think I'd rather speak to someone who cares about me than just someone who will forward my CV somewhere. And I think if and I think you can show you're credible, show your why, because I'm more likely to work with Leisha because I know that she cares about the people that she works with, and I knew about you before we even spoke, right? And I knew that you put yourself out there, made yourself vulnerable, and that made me trust you. I think a lot of the time we don't trust people because we think they're just trying to place us, but you had that brand. And I think if you can add value and not just be, oh, I've got this great job, why don't you move role, it's brilliant, you know, show that you're, show your why, show what your credibility in the industry.
But you got, you're actually looping right back to one of the very first things you said, which was the transactional recruitment market, which, you know, for a lot of people, if they've started in recruitment post-COVID, it's probably been very transactional because that's just the way it's been. But actually, if I think back to some of the worst messages I've had, that is what they are. They're just saying, I've noticed you've got more than 2 years recruitment experience, and I'm looking for somebody who's looking for 360. And, you know, and I just delete. I don't even reply. If it's something where I think they've obviously gone to a bit of effort, they've personalized it, then I actually reply and say, thank you so much. But, you know, I'm clearly never going to be moving jobs. It's my own business. But thank you anyway. I always reply, always reply. I just want to ask you on the video. I mean, you know, your personal paranoia aside, because I think you're fabulous on video because you're so expressive and beautiful and vivacious. But do you actually send that as an initial outreach, or is that when you know somebody? Is that a cold?
I often do it as a cold outreach. There's a great, I'm a massive fan of Vidyard. You can actually see how long they watch your video for. So I believe with all marketing, you need to analyze what you're doing, right? A lot of people just blindingly do things without looking at what's successful and what's not. But with the videos, you can look at how long they engaged with the video for, when they opened it. So you can be, you know, hot on it as soon as they've opened it. Right. Yeah. I hope you, you know, or post something or like one of their posts. Ultimately, I believe that in headhunting, you've got to build familiarity. And I have everyone in a sequence without giving all my secrets away. I do a video message. Then I would normally follow up with maybe a like of their post, and then I might do a voice note a few days later, and then I might do an email. But I will always make sure that I am familiar in that person's mind, so when they are ready to make the move, they know where to come.
They know. I like that, actually. I think that's an amazing tip. That there's a process to what you're doing there. There's a sequence to what you're doing, and, you know, trademark or not, I hope we're not giving away your trade secrets, but I think that's very often where a lot of people don't follow up on it, and there's no strategy to it. And the reason I actually ask that is that even though I'm a huge advocate of video and voice notes, as you know, as you are the recipient of hundreds over the last year or so, a lot of people don't like them. And actually, I've learned as I've built relationships with people, I had a client that I've actually got started with this week, and I left him a voice note right at the end of the process. And he said, he just rang me, and I said, no, you're okay. And he said, I have to tell you, after all these months of getting to know each other, I hate voice notes. I hate listening to them, and I hate leaving them. And I went, oh my God, I'm so sorry. So I always say, as a caveat, get to know your audience, and bear in mind some people just don't like listening or watching. And if that's the case, that might be why you're not getting, I don't mean you, by the way, here, I'm talking you as a community. It could be that your target audience, maybe some people don't enjoy. So I would say what Susanna said there is that is a combination then of, you know, bits of video, bit of typed, you know, maybe a WhatsApp or a typed message, as well as the video, because some people won't necessarily click through. I have to say, and I'm really sorry to tell you this, but when I get a cold outreach video, I don't play it.
No, and many don't. So we got to meet them exactly what you said, where they want to be met.
It's just,
we'll only know that if we keep trying to.
You'll only
words.
Know that. Yeah. No, I think that's really, really useful. And I do want to talk about personal brand, because that's very kind what you said about mine. I mean, I've worked really hard on it. It hasn't happened again. It's not another overnight success story. I've worked really hard. What's your tips on building a personal brand?
My tip is, and I'm a massive believer that this is what you've done, and it's something that many struggle to do. It is to create vulnerability. It took me a very long time to post the post that has been most successful on LinkedIn that I have posted. And I think you know the one. It's when I was in hospital and I was having a blood transfusion for iron, and I was probably at my lowest point, and that was integral to change for me. So I had it, the post ready to go for months, and I just did not want to post it. And the reason people liked it so much was because it did give something that was different, that was vulnerable. And I think so many of us, and some people can be, and that's okay, but so many of us are scared to share something really meaningful, and everyone's got an unfair advantage that they have that is personal to them, whether they share it or not. If you do, people will feel that they know you and bond with you more, which I think is really
I think this all kind of has a very nice golden thread all the way through it, because if we're talking about AI and we're talking about recipients of AI messages, and obviously our job is tasked to build communities and networks by doing outreach, that actually the thing that makes people remember you when they are moving jobs or when they are looking for people, whether you're recruiting chefs, whether you're recruiting doctors, whether you're recruiting recruiters like us, is the human connection. And what creates the human connection is that recognizing yourself in a story. And I think the only way you can do that is by sharing stories. Now, I know a lot of people do not like to share their personal stuff. We're not talking necessarily talking about being in hospital. I mean, I talk openly about some of the stuff I've experienced in my life. I'm just an open book, and I'm just like, I'm possibly on the verge of oversharing. But you don't need to necessarily that. It could be about how something made you feel. It could be an experience through work of what you experienced. It doesn't necessarily need to be, you know, I'm twice divorced, I'm sober, and, you know, I failed my A-levels. It doesn't need to be that intricate. But I think what Susanna's saying there is that it needs to be that human side of you is what will make you stand out on a platform where only a very small percentage of people ever share anything other than jobs or articles.
Yeah, absolutely. You see it in relationships everywhere. People who often struggle because they've got those barriers up. The barrier doesn't necessarily need to be personal, but opening the barrier and educating people is such a great way of branding yourself.
You know, I totally agree. But before we finish today, I think we'll have to do a part two, that's for sure. I am very interested to know, in your experience, what does the best interview process look like?
Well, I think it's really important to do it well, because so many companies, they overdo it and they lose candidates. I think, especially with passive candidates, you cannot be too quick. Time kills deals. Time kills placements, if you like. And I'm a massive believer of this. So I always try and consult my clients to do it swiftly. It doesn't have to be desperate, but, you know, normally within a couple of weeks of seeing that person, you don't have to do it all within a few days. You can be too soon, but getting the balance right. If you wait too long, you might lose that person. So I normally say about 2 weeks. I have seen the most successful ones being two-step. I'm personally not a fan of psychometric testing. And a lot of people might dislike me for this. I think it's great to gather information, but I don't think psychometric testing, and from all the recruiters that I've worked for, it's been hit and miss. It gives you information, but I wouldn't say to make a massive conclusion on it. Know your competencies. So if you know that people work really well in your environment who work well as a team, then ask them for examples. And I'm a huge fan of the role play scenarios because I've seen it work so many times, but I've seen it work better when people ask them to prepare it at interview, not before the interview.
Not beforehand, yeah.
Yeah, and you can really see quite a lot of people and how they work. If it's a new person to recruitment, we used to hate doing this, but we did it anyway. We used to get people in to do sales hour or sales calls if that was their role, and to see how they gel with the team, because it should never be a surprise if on the first day that you take that person.
I think for new recruiters entering the industry, I actually think spending a day or half a day is actually really important for them, because if you don't know, you don't know, and you don't know what an environment is. You know, I don't know what it's like to be in a circus, but if I was going to go and, you know, become an elephant trainer or trapeze artist, I'd definitely want to go and spend a bit of time there before I commit my life to it, or 2 years to it, whatever it might be. So I think it, I mean, that's a ridiculous scenario, but actually it makes a point, doesn't it? Why are we not doing that with our people that we're bringing into an industry where the job is tough and it's not so how true. People think it is? So I think, If I think back to my early career in the 90s, that is just what you did. You just went and spent half a day. Yeah. Role plays, I think absolutely for juniors. I think absolutely for trainees. I think once you start doing it with people who are very experienced, I think it becomes a bit of a dick swinging contest as to who can be the best actor in the room. I don't think that. I think as soon as you say role play, most people go, oh, psychometrics.
It's a horrible word, role play, isn't it? It's scenarios.
Competency-based scenarios, yeah, which for some reason that doesn't seem to have the same effect. It's just like, just use a different language. The psychometrics, I'm very, very much sat on the fence. I've got splinters in my bum, because I do think they're very accurate, because I've had clients that have over the years encouraged me to do one, they paid for me to do one, just so, you know, to try a new one out or whatever. But I think if they are used as part of the decision-making process, I think that's where the folly lies. And the reason I say that is that psychologically, most people going through an interview process are under duress, because they're working, they're still doing their day job, they're trying to find the time, they're probably doing it when the kids have gone to bed, maybe they're doing it at the end of a work day, maybe they're doing it on the lunch break. So it's not real. I think it's much more useful to do it, you know, in a more relaxed environment, probably at verbal offer stage, so they know they're getting a job with you. They're more likely to put themselves in the position that you want them to be in, and then utilize that for onboarding.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
As opposed to deciding whether they're the right person or not.
Yeah. And how many times are the expectations not clear? So they turn up and a client might say, oh my gosh, they're so different. And it's like, if that person is a bit quiet, well, maybe if you'd got them into the office before, you'd know that already. Or we're expecting them to do 100 calls a day. Well, you know, were they told that at interview? So just always being very clear. It sounds very obvious, but it will save you a headache if you get those expectations out before they have the job, or you tell them, or you get them into the office, see how they react in your environment before they take the job.
So to conclude, your ideal scenario with a decision-making process is timely, with I always think, with both the candidate and the client managing each other's expectations, because very often it can be one or t'other, and the recruiter is always stuck in the middle. It needs to be appropriate for the level of job. So what we're saying here is that if it's a very experienced hire, then you're probably going to have more competency-led questions, scenarios, rather than an entry person, where it will be based on your potential, how you think. We don't mind psychometrics if they're used for onboarding, but not for decision-making. And above all else, it's about being candid, constructive. And can I just add the word kind? I know that's not quite alliteration, but it's
definitely kind. And give them feedback, you know.
Yeah, be kind.
I always think,
agreed.
The reason I like the role plays is because you can see how they accept the feedback. It's not so much about how they perform, but like, oh, I really like what you did there. Why don't you try that again differently? And you'll see if they look uncomfortable, as if, why are you telling me what to do? Yeah. I'm good at this. Then maybe not coachable. So there's so many different things. But I don't think you need to have a 5 process interview. Personally, I think it can be done in 2, maximum 3.
I think it depends on the level of role, but I agree with you. I get scared when someone gets offered after one interview. I'm like, that's like accepting a marriage proposal after one date. Wow. Occasionally, yeah. Yeah, not so much post COVID, I have to say. When I say post COVID, I mean boom. But you know, yeah, I've had dozens of people that have been offered on the spot and have accepted and have started and have done really well. And then others where I've thought, what are you doing? No, they're going to come back again. I'm not trying to add a process, but they're going to come back again. Susanna, we could literally talk all day, but sadly we have run out of time. I am so happy that we did this, but we'll definitely do a part 2, I think, next season. We want people to follow you. So The Counteroffer is your podcast over on all the Spotify, YouTube channels?
Yeah, it's not so much recruitment based. We're going into a very wellness, mental health stage at the moment, which is something that is very personal and interesting to me. You can find me, Chime Search, my page on LinkedIn, Susanna Gray Jones, or my Instagram handle, which is Susanna Chime Search as well.
Wonderful. Well, from hearing rainy Manchester, which I've not even seen since I started recording these this morning, too, I presume still very sunny Dubai. Thank you so much for joining us once again on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
We are thrilled to welcome to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast a new partner in KeyBridge IT. KeyBridge provide 24/7 support to all of their customers. Established in 2010, KeyBridge IT Solutions is a London-based fully managed IT support and solutions provider. And for recruiters like me, we all need the IT expert to sort our problems out, whether it's with Microsoft Cloud, Microsoft 365, internet connectivity, security, Microsoft Azure. I mean, all these words actually mean nothing to me. What about you? But so much more than that. They work across many industries, not just recruitment, but if you're listening from the world of leisure or charity or finance or even marketing, they will be able to help. So click on the link in the podcast show and get to know KeyBridge IT. We are so proud to be partners of Needy, the gifting revolution. Here at Key Recruitment, we absolutely love to send out bespoke gifts to our new place candidates to welcome them in their new jobs, but also as an extra special thank you to clients or when a team is celebrating something really special. But to be honest, we were really fed up with dull or mediocre gifts that you could just buy on the high street that didn't really reflect who we are at Key Recruitment as a business. This is why we chose Needy. Needy source sustainably from the UK's best independent businesses, offering the most perfect array of bespoke gifts and experiences too. So no more boring bottles of plonk or rubbish boxes of chocolates. This is how you make your customers' day with a gift that really matters and shows that you really want to do something special for them. For more information on how psychology and AI forming to make the best gift experience for you, click on the link and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when ordering. The Recruiters Recruitment Podcast is thrilled to be partnering with Inclusion Crowd. Inclusion Crowd put the D into diversity, but do it disruptively. We love that. Really reflecting what we're about. I was introduced to Inclusion Crowd back in 2020, and I've been absolutely blown away with what they're doing to totally transform the recruitment and hiring sector. They believe at Inclusion Crowd that companies should be reflective of society and that no matter who you are listening now, you have a story to tell. You have a contribution to make. An Inclusion Crowd educates you in allowing your voice to come out and share that story, but doing it in a way that educates your colleagues and your customers equally. Inclusion Crowd, like the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast, has clients all over the world, and they specialize in our industry. What we all want to do together is to maintain best practice and to raise industry standards to enable us to attract and retain the best talent, but doing so inclusively and with true diversity. By doing this, by accomplishing a true EDI policy within your business, you will also retain the top talent as well as attract new talent, which is a win-win for everybody listening, making more profitable business and a much better industry, highly regarded. Inclusion Crowd are also the official awarding body for the Inclusion and Diversity Certification Mark within recruitment. We are so proud to be assisting and partnering Inclusion Crowd. If you want to know more information, please click on the link in this episode and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when you do so. Now, back to the episode.